The Christina Borgeson Show on TNT.
So in our second hour, we're going to stay with the theme of black hat operatives within U.S. government agencies, the White House and State Department, along with private sector actors and institutions acting criminally to protect their interests, even when they are deadly to the American people and others around the world. Staying with this theme is my next guest, whose job it was, he says, to, quote, work within the military intelligence matrix to identify, analyze, track down, and destroy terrorist-financed networks and operations. Scott Bennett, who was a second lieutenant in the 11th Psychological Warfare Battalion of the U.S. Army Reserve, as well as an employee, a terrorist threat finance analyst of the well-known information technology consulting firm Booz Allen Hamilton, he wrote a report titled Shell Game, a Military Whistleblowing Report to Congress, The Betrayal and Cover-Up by the U.S. Government of the Union Bank of Switzerland Terrorist Finance Connection to Booz Hamilton and the U.S. Central Command. He, too, found himself sitting in jail after trying to generate attention and action on the shocking details he'd uncovered. Welcome, Mr. Bennett.
Good to be with you.
So, talk about what prompted you to write two reports, how you found out what you found out, and what happened with the reports and to you. Anyway, essentially, tell your story.
Well, what prompted me, of course, was how I was raised. I was raised by a father who was a Marine Corps fighter pilot. He flew F-8s in Vietnam from 1968 to 69. My mother was from Scotland. My dad's side was German, and my mom's Scottish side, which kind of gave a genetic disposition, I guess, for clashing of spirit of truth against the spirit of lies. So I was raised a certain way, and I loved my country, and I went into the military as an officer with a direct commission after I got my PhD in political theory, and I'd worked in the Bush administration, I'd worked in the think tanks in Washington, D.C. Before that, I'd worked in advertising and done some film operations down in Southern California. But I'd moved out to Washington in 1998 to pursue my master's, my doctorate, and work in government and really go to war against the liberal leftist Democrat establishment of insane government bureaucrats. And it was far better back in 2000 than it is now. I mean, now we are no longer the American Republic. We are the gulag of American schizophrenics that are degenerating into retard zombies with the COVID-19 vax.
Wait a second. Before we get into the overview, I was talking about, you know, what did you learn? Where were you when you learned what that prompted these reports?
Well, I mean, people can read the book. You go to shellgamewhistleblower.com. You can see the whole journey, if you will, from my days at U.S. Special Operations Command, the State Department, Counterterrorism Office, Central Command. And I discovered a lot of the money that the bad guys were using. I saw a lot of contractor fraud from Booz Allen Hamilton. Ed Snowden was a colleague of mine in the Hawaii office. We worked together in the national security team. He had been tracking actually one of the intelligence assets that we were following, a guy named Brad Birkenfeld, who was a banker at Union Bank of Switzerland and had brought over 19,000 bank accounts that were being used by the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton State Department, and Obama and Biden for terrorist financing. So I discovered all of this and
filed reports. When you say that, hold up. When you talk about these 19,000 accounts that were being used by these people, could you explain, could you give a little more detail about that?
Well, like Union Bank of Switzerland is the largest Swiss banker, and Swiss bankers are known for secrecy. They can establish accounts in their banks in Switzerland as well as all over the world, and they are impervious to investigation and disclosure because of their foreign status. For that reason, they're a very They're a very effective tool for transferring money from various groups, CIA, Mossad, MI6, to their agents in ISIS, Al-Qaeda, whatever you want to call them, as well as wealthy Saudis and Qataris and other Gulf Emirate nations sending money to be used for financing operations. So the Union Bank of Switzerland had a banker named Brad Birkenfeld, among many others, who had tried to bring this material over to the U.S. government back in 2007, I think it was originating. And they were shut down. A lot of these bankers were thrown in jail. A lot of them were killed. Brad Birkenfeld had been imprisoned and his bank accounts covered up and basically confiscated. So we had been tracking him and UBS and other banks like HSBC to find the money supply that was going to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Iraq, these places. So that's how Swiss banks terrorist financing intermingle. It's just the banking process. So I was an officer in the Army who was tasked with tracking these banks, tracking the bankers, tracking their systems of transference and their locations and their networks and their operations, and building profiles for targeting operations. In other words, for military assassination operations. So I discovered a lot of this and started reporting on it, but it was kind of cracking open a lid of a can that no one wanted to open, because little did we know how deep the Obama, Hillary Clinton agents were in using this money for, again, coup d'etats in Libya, coup d'etats in later Ukraine, coup d'etats in Syria, coup d'etats against Iran. That's where the black budget operations are utilized. They were also running drugs from the Southeast Asia areas, as well as Afghanistan. There was a program called Deep Black, which I reported on in my book too, about how the U.S. government and Mossad were using drug trafficking operations for financing. So there was a lot of dirty operations in the U.S. intelligence community and in certain military circles. So when I discovered that,
go ahead.
I started making noise and they didn't like the noise I was making.
So, you know, what's interesting is you come right out and you say that if we were to shut down the Saudi money spigot, a lot of this problem would go away. And then you talk about the Clinton Foundation being part of a money laundering operation. I think those two things are would be of great interest to the audience to hear from you about.
Well, they're mutually inclusive. The Saudis, the Qataris, the United Arab Emirates, Morocco, a whole host of Wahhabi Sunni kingdoms in the Middle East were financing the Clinton Foundation, basically extortion money, a racketeering operation, and in exchange for hundreds of millions of dollars that these Gulf nations were giving to Saudi Arabia, the Hillary Clinton State Department was bequeathing favors from international arms trades to selling uranium to the Russians. That was Hillary Clinton. What they accused Donald Trump of doing, Hillary Clinton was actually doing, selling uranium to Russian nationals and organizations. And it was a money laundering extortion operation. And that they thought they were going to be benefited from this, the Saudis and everyone that was giving money to the Clinton Foundation in exchange for State Department favors. They thought they were going to benefit because they all expected Hillary Clinton to be made president for the 8 years following Barack Obama. So they were investing in their future by sowing into the Hillary Clinton racket. And thank God he intervened and overthrew this tyranny of wickedness and inserted Donald Trump. And of course, they went ballistic and crazy and schizophrenic over Donald Trump's election and have been ever since. And in fact, engaged in massive election fraud and again, achieved a coup d'etat against Trump in 2020. I know I was there. I was doing the analytics with a variety of other military people. And, you know,
did you guys put out a report on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was election fraud. I was back there with General Flynn's people, Joe Flynn, his brother, Sidney Powell. I had met Sidney Powell and Joe Flynn at a conference in 2018 in which I'd given them intelligence on Covington & Burling, which was a law firm that represented the Clinton Foundation and also was an intermediary to these Gulf countries that were donating money. So Covington & Burling, this law firm in Washington, was the nexus point for a lot of this illegality. And it employed, before Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer, before they became attorney general and assistant attorney general, with Loretta Lynch as their underling, they worked for this law firm, Covington & Burling. So they returned to work for that law firm when they immediately left the Department of Justice, when Obama lost, and went back to Covington. So I had approached General Flynn's people and said to his brother, this is before Sidney Powell was ever hired, and said, General Flynn is being represented by this law firm that was engaged in all sorts of terrorist financing with the Clinton Foundation. They are not representing him to help him. They are representing him to bury him. And he's going to be a dead man if he keeps them up. So Sidney Powell and Joe Flynn took that back to Michael Flynn. He read the report. He fired Covington & Burling and hired Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell called me later for more intel. I gave it to her. She filed a motion in court. I filed an amicus brief on General Flynn's supporting General Flynn and the corruption that had occurred. And all charges were dropped because the judge.
Now, let me ask you something.
Let me finish. The Department of Justice wanted to, on no uncertain terms, keep it buried that they had been working with Covington & Burling. So it's important because the Department of Justice having a scurrilous and insider relationship with this law firm, this is the same thing that they've done to Donald Trump. And that's the reason why General Flynn was freed. If this hadn't gotten to Sidney Powell and Joe Flynn, if he had not discovered this law firm had betrayed him, they probably would have had him take a plea deal. They would have imprisoned him, and then they would have killed him. He'd be a dead man right now if he had went into jail. I have no doubt. The same thing they did to Whitey Bulger, they would have done to General Flynn.
Wow. So these documents connecting the Clinton Foundation to all this money, where are these documents?
Well, there's a lot of them that are classified, top secret classified, so they can't be discussed or in any way communicated, but they're in SCIFs at CENTCOM, Special Operations Command, the State Department Counterterrorism Office, where Clinton was based in her Secretary of State position. Booz Allen Hamilton also has them in their SCIFs in their main headquarters in McLean, Virginia. And I submitted them, a lot of them, and some of them I can't discuss or share here, and I couldn't share in the book, but a lot of them were submitted to the members of Congress as a military whistleblowing report that showed WikiLeaks cables and their exposure of the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton State Department, working to actively confiscate these 19,000 bank accounts and bury them. And of course, James Comey and the FBI, Department of Justice, ran by Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer, who worked for the law firm that represented Union Bank of Switzerland. That's the key issue. Covington & Burling represented Union Bank of Switzerland. So This whole incestuous matrix, this incestuous backhanded deal making between Eric Holder, Lanny Brewer, Loretta Lynch at the Department of Justice with their old law firm pals at Covington & Burling, which also employed Michael Chertoff, formerly of Homeland Security, the same guy who made all the billions from the scanners sold to airports after the great false flag attack of 9/11. And also Roger Zackheim, was a lawyer at this firm, and his father was my boss, Dov Zackheim. And Dov Zackheim, of course, was the comptroller at the Pentagon when $2.3 trillion went missing. And the next day was the alleged airplane attack on the Pentagon, which I don't think happened at all. I think that was a cruise missile masquerading as a mini plane. But there's no way that a 757 would have crashed into the Pentagon and left no wheels, no tails, no baggage, no bodies, just a few pieces of crumpled aluminum on a perfectly green and scarless lawn. So I think the 9/11 event speaks for itself. I know you had a conversation with Susan Lindauer about a lot of this. But that's
yeah,
where the
I'd like to hear what you have to say about Zakheim's, you know, first of all, about Zakheim's role in 9/11, what you think is Zakheim's role. And I'd like you to talk to me about whether or not you have documentation on that.
Well, bad guys are always listening, so I don't go too much into what I have and what I don't have. I can say people can read the book and draw their own conclusions. But the bottom line is my boss, Dov Zackheim, was an element, if not a major figure, of the 9/11 attacks. He was the comptroller at the Pentagon. His son, Roger Zackheim, was a lawyer at the House Armed Services Committee before he joined this crooked law firm, Covington & Burling. But Dov Zackheim, working with Donald Rumsfeld, I think was aiding and abetting a lot of the setup of the fake attacks in New York that were designed to trigger this psychological mass traumatization of the American psyche and mobilize America into this military juggernaut that would proceed on a crusade of taking down seven countries in 5 years based entirely on fraud, lies, and deception. And Dov Zackheim, of course, also had connections to remote control planes. I know there's been speculation about planes being used, but there's other stories that challenge that, saying that there were holograms, because planes essentially can't fly into steel reinforced concrete buildings. They don't have the structural integrity. Planes are made out of hollow aluminum.
We have to take a break right now. And okay. I just want to tell the audience that if you enjoy listening to TNT Radio and you think we're doing a good job, please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Patrick Henningsen's talking about.
So I'm looking at the Washington Post. This is really a disaster of a newspaper. But anyway, here's the lead story. The war in Ukraine. The U.S. struggled to convince allies Zelensky of risk of invasion, says the Washington Post. And this account, in previously unreported detail, shines new light on the road to war in the military campaign in Ukraine, drawn from in-depth interviews with dozens of senior U.S., Ukrainian, European, and NATO officials. So this is basically trying to shore up their propaganda line. Why would they do a retrospective story at this point in the conflict? That doesn't seem like that's the story. The story is that Odessa, Nikolaev, is about to get overrun, and Ukraine is about to become a landlocked rump state. That's, to me, the story. Zelensky is sacking and firing and arresting all of his intelligence heads, SBU heads, for treason. Okay? The regime is totally collapsing. To me, that's the story.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization, the left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated more than $310 million to mainstream media. We don't tell the story that Bill Gates wants you to know. We tell the real story. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm back with Scott Bennett, a former lieutenant in the Army Reserve and former terrorist threat finance analyst for Booz Allen Hamilton, who wrote a report titled Shell Game, a Military Whistleblowing Report to Congress, the Betrayal and Cover-Up by the U.S. Government of the Union Bank of Switzerland Terrorist Finance Connection to Booz Hamilton and U.S. Central Command. Found himself in jail after that. There was something that really jumped out at me in your report, and we've been discussing it. You wrote, you had sent to Trump what you said were sufficient proof, documents, video recordings, and testimony showing that the Union Bank of Switzerland, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Eric Holder, and Lenny Brewer at the Department of Justice in Covington and Burling, Dov Zakheim at Booz Allen Hamilton, and his son Roger Zakheim at the House Armed Services Committee, so we've got this whole cabal, have entered into an agreement to continue to money launder funds through the Clinton Foundation for Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, Morocco, Israel, in order to finance the foreign mercenaries and weapons being funneled through Libya up into Turkey and then into Syria as a mercenary force to remove by force of arms Syrian President Bashar Assad. So you sent all that to the Trump administration?
Yeah, I sent him a copy of my book. I sent him a copy of a private memo that explained everything that the deep state was doing, that they had done to General Flynn, that my role in that, in December of 2017, I sent that to Trump. So I sent it to the White House with you know, a full outline of here's everything they've done, here's the laws they violated, and it's in my book, Shell Game. You see, I waited for a year. I didn't want to put the memo in the book because it was confidential. I wanted, you know, the president's eyes only. But I then later put it in the book when I saw just how corrupt they were, what they were doing, and I explained the whole Russia hoax nonsense. All of this was in 2017, and they can read it in the Shell Game whistleblower report. It's in the back, dated December 17th, the memo to the president, and it explains also how Andrew McCabe had been involved in dirty dealings with Hillary Clinton.
Remind people who Andrew McCabe is before you explain.
Andrew McCabe was the FBI director who was looking into the Hillary Clinton email situation. And he was part of this cabal under Comey. But his particular guilt, as I presented to the president, was he had been approached by Terry McAuliffe, who was the Democrat National Committee chairman. Terry McAuliffe was also a former governor of Virginia. Terry McAuliffe was also a former high-level staffer in the Clinton White House in the 90s. So Terry McAuliffe and Hillary Clinton approached Andrew McCabe and asked him if his wife would run for Senate against State Senator Dick Black. Now, Dick Black is a friend of mine. Dick Black is a former Vietnam fighter pilot, helicopter pilot, Marine, former JAG, high-level Pentagon guy. He's also very instrumental in the Syria situation. He knows all about the Middle East. He knows about the CIA running operations, Israel running operations in Syria. So Dick Black was a very threatening thorn in the side to the ongoing deep state operations in Syria and in the Middle East and such. And they had approached Andrew McCabe and bribed him with $700,000 to have his wife run against Senator Dick Black. And they removed the woman who was running. They had a candidate already. So they came in, they took that candidate out and put in Jill McCabe, the wife of Andrew McCabe. Now, if that's not a conflict of interest, if that's not a act of corruption and criminality that should be prosecuted, where the FBI agent looking at Hillary Clinton's emails to determine if illegality had occurred, looking at laptops, if that figure, Andrew McCabe and his wife, isn't a conflict of interest, we've lost, you know, our mind and our government. But that was reported to Donald Trump, too, the Andrew McCabe, Jill McCabe connection to Terry McAuliffe and Hillary Clinton. Again, all of this should have been and could have been acted upon in 2017. And we would never have had the issues of Russiagate and the compounding attacks and torments against Donald Trump. We would never have had that had all of this intelligence been acted upon and weaponized. And it wasn't until after the 2020 election. I think Donald Trump was the most backstabbed and crippled with bad staff around him that any president ever has been. I mean, he had some terrible people around him that had no business in government. His daughter shouldn't have been there. His idiot son-in-law, Jared Kushner, shouldn't have been there. Half of the people in his cabinet shouldn't have been there, especially the Zionist Mnuchin and Segal Mandelker. They had investments in China, so half these people in his cabinet were playing softball with China. They had a vicious Zionist agenda to go to war against Iran, so they didn't want peace under any circumstances, and that was a complete failure. I was in Iran as part of a conference. I know that country and people very well. They are not a threat to the United States, despite what the mainstream media tries to throw out there. But, you know, the American people don't realize it. They don't know it. But I was there with Phil Giraldi. I was there with Mike Maloof. These are Pentagon, CIA, State Department men.
Yeah.
We had approached the president and told him he could have had a North Korea moment with Iran had he chosen to, you know, where he stepped across the street with Kim Jong-un and had a wonderful, you know, camera moment. He could have had the same thing with Iran. He could have brought peace to Iran, but instead his cabinet were backstabbing him. John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley. These are neocon Zionist warmongers who have been part of this American juggernaut military empire.
So this is not just a Democrat. This is not just a Democrat cabal. This is
a
bipartisan cabal.
No, you have some. You look at Mitch McConnell. He's a scumbag. Look at John Bolton. He's a scumbag psychopath. Look at Mike Pompeo. Scumbag, psychopath, and liars. Now, they're very good at lying. They're very good at spinning. But they're
also
evil.
Let me just say something, okay? One thing I'm not comfortable with is if you have proof or whatever. I know that I get that you think these are unsavory people, but one thing I really am uncomfortable with is when you call them things like that. Just say this is what he did that was illegal, criminal, or wrong, because it doesn't.
Well, it's illegal to hide intelligence that shows criminal acts and acts of treason are being done against the United States and the people of the United States. These people are employed by the people of the United States. They don't occupy positions because they're anointed. They have oaths and duties.
Yeah, it's better to tell people what they did.
Mike Pompeo is responsible for assassinating General Soleimani, who is the equivalent of George Washington to Americans. And he invented this, you know, essentially
a
lie.
That's the Iranian general.
Right, right. So they invented this lie that the Soleimani was backing ISIS, where the opposite is true. The Iranians have been combating ISIS. The Iranians and the Syrians have been fighting ISIS because ISIS was a plague in Syria. General, you know, or Dick Black knew all about that. He met Bashar Assad, and he also briefed Tulsi Gabbard. So, you know, the truth of what these people like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton and Nikki Haley have been doing is deceiving the country, and they deceived the president. And
well, it's treason.
You know, did it for
it's
their own.
It's treason. You know, I think
well,
you can call that treason.
Warrants the death penalty too, doesn't it?
So I want to talk about it. So it was Dove Sakim who set you up for jail, and I just want to read something that you wrote about Dove and Roger Sakim, because you said they worked to suppress your reports. And then you said joining them at Covington and Burling was Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, who had flown the Bin Laden family out of America after 9/11 and shipped the World Trade Center tower steel to China before any forensic team could analyze it as a crime scene. And before joining Booz Allen's, you call Booz Allen Mossad's money machine. Sakim was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Heritage Foundation and served as a foreign policy advisor to George W. Bush as part of a group led by Condi Rice, as part of a group that called themselves the Vulcans, with Condi Rice and George Bush who were part of it. He became Undersecretary for Defense for G.W. Bush and the Pentagon controller who lost $2.3 trillion. And before that, Sakim had been CEO of SBC International, a subsidiary of System Planning Corporation, a high technology analytical firm which had designed remote control technology to take over and fly planes in the event of a terrorist hijacking. After the Iraq invasion, Sakim was appointed by President Bush as a member of the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, and in May 2004, joined the intelligence contracting firm Booz Allen Hamilton. So that's Dove Sakim. So explain what he did to you.
Well, Dove Sakim was my immediate boss at Booz Allen Hamilton when I had approached and began filing reports and making presentations. And asking questions about what was being done, and some of it I can't go into. I was told to stand down. I was told we were in the midst of renewing contracts, and we weren't going to be taking any actions or investigating these matters until new contracts were developed. So essentially, the national security of the United States is put on the back burner in preference for contracts that were being, you know, basically renegotiated for money. And, you know, I went ahead and did what I had to do and made reports and engaged people that I knew in the Pentagon. I had family who were military in the Pentagon. I won't name names, but I had pretty high connections. And when I started pursuing leads and doing things making noise, the next thing they dropped the hammer, they stopped me at the gate, said I filled out paperwork improperly, and removed me from base. Now, before that, they had issued a BOLO against me, which is a death warrant. A BOLO is, if you see this person, you have authority to shoot on sight. Yep. So it was obvious to me that I had revealed some things, and I was, a threat to their money-making operation.
And so, based on what, did they send you to jail?
What's that?
Based on what did they send you to jail?
Oh, well, they said I filled out a housing form improperly, and they called that making a false statement on a government form. And the same thing they charged Michael Flynn with, making a false statement, 100-1. And I thought it was all, I thought it was actually a training operation because I was to be deployed. I had a top secret clearance. I thought the CIA must be, you know, doing this to see if I'll break, to see, you know, test my character. They do these sort of testing operations. So I expected at any moment someone to walk in the door when they had me in handcuffs and were torturing me in a room. I expected at any moment a CIA operative to come in and say, Mr. Bennett, you've passed. Okay. I was seriously expecting any moment top level CIA guys to come in and say, okay, you passed the test. Now here's what your mission's going to be. I honestly, as my hand to God, thought this is okay. That's why I was kind of excited. I thought, oh great. See how much can you torture me? How much? Yeah.
God.
I can go through anything. And little did I know it was, cause they were, I turned them inside out with discovering, you know, the whole shell game that they were running, this whole inside racketeering using the U.S. government and the State Department and the Hillary Clinton Foundation like a wheel of fortune. And it wasn't until they threw me in jail that I realized it was real. And then part two of the mission opened up where instead of being sent to California, I was redirected to the very same prison where some financial bankers had been imprisoned. And I realized then my handlers, if you will, in the white hat community had redirected me up there to debrief the very people that I had been looking at in my military
Brad
mission.
Brad Birkenfeld was in that prison.
He was one of them. They had a whole bunch of people up in Pennsylvania. It was a specialized political prisoner camp.
Who else did they have there?
They had a lot of finance people, a lot of bankers. I can't remember all their names. They had some senators from Pennsylvania and some general politicians. They had a lot of high-level mafia people that were there. White crime. White executives, a lot of lawyers, a lot of CEOs, a lot of military contractors, and it was at a camp. So it was, they had international people there too. Actually, they had executives from Cargolux and these airline companies, if you could believe it, that were from Luxembourg and Germany. I know because I played soccer with them. That was one, you know, benefit. I played soccer with high level mafiosa executives and former military guys that were also in jail, all based on political persecution. So when I see what they're doing to the January 6th people, I think, yeah, you have no clue. You're having a walk in the park to what I had to go through. But it was an interesting revelation about what this country is really all about.
Why are you still alive?
Well, God says, no weapon formed against ye shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise up against thee thou shalt condemn. And he shall send his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. So I have no fear of man, and it was God's mission to send me into this Joseph pit and this dungeon to not only see the revelations of 9/11 and see what was really going on in the State Department and the Obama administration, but to meet the actual political prisoners that I debriefed as a military officer. Remember, when they threw me in jail, it's the first time in the history of the United States that a Department of Justice department has charged a military officer with filling out a housing form on a military base, allegedly incorrectly. The military never charged me with anything. The military kept completely quiet. Why? Because Barack Obama and his minions at the Department of Justice told them to be quiet. We're going to shut this guy up. And that's why the military let them come in and do something that was totally unconstitutional and ultimately will be thrown out in the court system. And the judge also was corrupt because her name was Judge Virginia Hernandez Covington. She was married to one of the partners at Covington and Burling. So I didn't realize all of this until I was thrown in jail and the pieces started coming together and people started giving me information from the outside and getting the WikiLeaks cables and all of this. It was like going into a think tank, going into a research facility and assembling this massive report
on the crimes of the deep state. And that's what the military whistleblowing report was. And what's most disturbing is you can thumb through that book and you'll see all the members of Congress that I sent my report to.
Yep.
And none of them did a single thing. You can see all the names. Dianne Feinstein and Senator Bill Nelson tried to.
Oh, they wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Yeah. They wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
They talked about it. They put a letter. Senator Nelson wrote Dianne Feinstein saying, who is this Scott Bennett? How does he have this information? Not how do we act on this information. Not
exactly.
How do we investigate the terrorist financing, but how do we shut him up?
Yeah.
And they sent Michael Isikoff and Tom Hamburger up.
Yep.
You remember Michael Isikoff from NBC News. He was...
Well, Mike Isikoff, he's an interesting guy because, he did a lot to try and cover up the whole Seth Rich situation. We have to take a break right now, but we'll be right back after this break.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Two big weather events look like they're going to be shaping up: the increase in activity in the tropics in all the basins over the next 3 to 4 weeks, to a point where it's above normal activity, especially in the Atlantic Basin. Now, it's been very, very quiet, and the reason why it's been very quiet is because it's been so cool over the tropics, anywhere from 18 to 35, 40,000 feet up. Now, this is exactly opposite of the so-called trapping hotspot theory, and I've gone over this a couple of times. Another big event is how cold it's going to be in much of Asia, Africa, Australia, and Antarctica relative to averages, all right? It's not going to be so overpoweringly cold that people are going to be freezing. After all, north of the equator, it is still summer, but it is going to be much below normal, it looks like, especially when we get to next week. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, reminding you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Hey Australia, there's never been a better time to check up on your health. We have a world-class healthcare system that's easy to access, even when you can't be there in person. Telehealth enables you to catch up with your GP or health professional, and the Australian government has now made it permanently available through Medicare. Show your health some love, face-to-face, by phone or video call. Care for your health. Find out more at australia.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
The climate change lunatics in government and at the WEF will make meat, cheese, milk, and chocolate heavily taxed luxury items to save the planet. Just like private jets, the rich will indulge in whatever they want, while the poor are left with nothing. Remind me how the French Revolution ended again, when the poor had nothing? Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
I'm talking to Scott Bennett, former lieutenant in the Army Reserve, as well as former terrorist threat finance analyst for the information technology consulting firm Booz Allen Hamilton, who wrote a report titled Shell Game, Military Whistleblowing Report to Congress, talking about just humongous crimes being run by operatives and private sector people working together, operatives in our government working with private sector people, including the war on terrorism, which, you know, it seems to me, Scott, should be called, instead of the war on terrorism, it should be called the War on Terrorism, Inc., because it's the never-ending money machine for this cabal of people. So you mentioned that 9/11 was a CIA Mossad operation. And you mentioned that nuclear small nukes were involved. Could you talk about you talk about Snowden having proof of that. So there are two things I want you to talk about: this nuclear thing and Snowden and what the information he had, and also after that, Seth Rich, because we're running out of time. We only have like 10 more minutes, so I really want you to address these just mind-blowing issues.
Well, the intelligence community and the military share their intelligence matrix. The TSSEI channel is the top secret sensitive compartmented information channel. So every state agency, every FBI, counterterrorism, CIA, military defense intelligence agency, basically enter all of this material into a massive encyclopedia library database, so it can be used to retrieve information on, you know, targets and countries of issues and events, and you know, it's shared also within certain realms of the Five Eyes, so the British, the Australians, the Canadians, the U.S. military and intelligence agencies can cross-pollinate and utilize it. So a lot of that material was accessible to us. I had a top-secret clearance. Ed Snowden had a top-secret clearance at CI. He was in the Hawaii doing cyber operations. I was in U.S. State Department and SOCOM and CENTCOM doing psychological warfare. So it was a little bit different. He was techie. I was more of the theoretical communications. And then I transitioned into the terrorist financing because they wanted me to track the money supply and do target operations for that. So we put together a lot of the research on banking and bankers and systems and wahalas and all the things that do the money transfers. And Ed Snowden, when he was at CIA before he came to Booz Allen Hamilton, had been tracking the Swiss banker Brad Birkenfeld. Basically, Brad had told me the story how he was lured into a bar situation. He was driving home after the bar. The Swiss police pulled him over, accused him of a DUI, put him in jail. And the next day, a CIA agent went in and showed his badge and basically got Brad Birkenfeld out of jail and tried to turn him. That was included in the movie Snowden because I'd talked to Oliver Stone and his people making the movie and debriefed them about that. So they included it in the movie about Brad Birkenfeld, only they made it a Pakistani banker. So that was the Snowden connection to Brad Birkenfeld and myself. And when he saw that they had come after me and they'd also put Birkenfeld in jail, and he saw that we had got together because the same white hats were working with Snowden, he soon got out of the country. And he took a lot of the material with him that he had in Hawaii. And not everything got out, though. And a lot of the stuff that he had was based on a lot of the 9/11 intelligence, a lot of stuff that Dr. Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett, a lot of other people. I don't know how many names they want released or not, but a lot of people have put in intel. Susan Lindauer knows a lot about this, too, about nuclear devices that were in the Twin Towers that were ignited, that it destroyed the internal core of the building, in addition to some of the thermite wraps that they had. And you could tell that based on a lot of the radioactive tests that were done later, a lot of the subterranean, cavernous, molten canyons that were below the Twin Towers, that was done by molten steel, molten rock, and only a nuclear device could have done that.
Yeah, but you specifically said that Ed Snowden had communicated top-secret Q clearance documents detailing the use of nuclear weapons during the 9/11 event, and how many nukes were made in the USA and handed to Israel, who then used them against us with the help of Bush, Cheney, Chertoff, etc. So...
Yeah, they
are
all,
you saying that Brad that Ed Snowden, huh?
Well, no, I was just going to say they set off the Twin Towers as more of a firecracker, and they had insured them. There's a big payoff behind that. There's a lot of people that made a lot of money, including Larry Silverstein, who bought the Twin Towers and double insured them for a terrorist strike. So
yeah, I know that. I'm just asking you about this one thing. So you're saying that Ed Snowden knows that nuclear weapons were used during 9/11?
Well, I'm not gonna talk for him or say what he does know or not. You know, he's in a precarious position right now, waiting to see about getting pardoned and coming back in the country when Trump and the rest of these guys work.
No, but it's in your book. It's in your report. It's in your report.
Yeah. Yeah, it speaks very plainly and very clearly. But
I just read it.
Snowden, yeah, I wrote it, and I know him. So I know there's a lot of things that he tried to bring to light, but he couldn't quite do it because he didn't have the time. He had to get out of Dodge.
Was this one of them?
This is history. Oh yeah.
So let's talk about the Seth Rich situation.
Well,
what is it that you had on that?
Assassinated, of course. Well, he was assassinated because of the downloading of the DNC server material from the Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton deception, and was murdered because of it. There was no robbery. There was no wallet or watch being taken. He was assassinated, and I think it was plainly because of his downloading the material that showed plainly how Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrat establishment had conspired to dethrone Bernie Sanders in exchange for Hillary Clinton, and that angered Seth Rich because of his sympathies towards the libertarian Bernie Sanders school. And, of course, a few people have died who were associated with that case. I mean, Hillary Clinton is the literal witch that everyone who comes into contact with or sees some of these videos of the intel that I'm sure you've seen a lot of the material relating to child sacrifice and pedophilia and a lot of the cannibalistic practices that a lot of people have sworn they've seen on video materials that the FBI had. This is a depth of darkness and wickedness that very few people are familiar with.
I've always been surprised that more scrutiny wasn't given to the Podesta emails in that whole email dump, because that's where the really dark stuff seems to be,
Well, that's where the FBI comes in. That the entire apparatus of the U.S. Justice Department and FBI are absolutely corrupt, black to the core, rotten and evil to the core. I'm not talking about the small scale junior officers who are on the third floor, carrying mail or doing little jobs. But the high-level, almost Masonic-level hierarchy of the FBI and the Department of Justice and the CIA, these are rotten, dedicated agencies to advancing what was the George Bush, Dick Cheney, Clinton cabal, Obama cabal. That's the deep state professional government. And they had no interest in doing anything that would disturb Hillary Clinton's trajectory for political assumption, and everything to react with fury and hatred towards anything that would disturb that. And Donald Trump was the disturber in chief, and they embarked in a crusade to dethrone him using the Mueller report, the Russia hoax. Again, Trump's failure was he had some of the worst people around him: Jeff Sessions, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton. None of these people, James Mattis got my report when he was commander of U.S. Central Command and did absolutely nothing. He should be executed for treason because I reported how military men were being killed by finances that were going to bad guys in Libya and Syria. And the Libya event occurred on September 11th, 2011. The same day that CIA paid off Brad Birkenfeld $104 million to make him quiet and disappear to Malta. So there's a lot of subterranean operations that have been going on, but Trump was injured and betrayed, and quite honestly, I don't know if he should be returned to the presidency because of his ineptitude at understanding how government works.
Who in the world would be able, this is a huge, what you're describing is a huge, multi-generational, criminal enterprise. Who's going to be able to go up to against that,
Well, one piece at a time. It takes some leaders. I like Jim Jordan. I like Matt Gaetz. I like the firebrands. I like the men. I like Marjorie Taylor Greene. I like Laura
Barber. Are they aware of all this?
Well, to some degree, I would hope they are, but I think they need to be more informed. But, you know, a lot of these people make a lot of noise, but they aren't good batters when it comes to hitting the ball. They don't always step up to the plate.
I mean, if what you're saying, if everything you're saying is true, it's dangerous to run for presidency for president if you oppose all this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where warriors come in. That's where real warriors, real Americans, real patriots come in. Are you willing to put your life on the line for the Constitution, or are you willing to do only that which is going to keep you alive and keep you employed? I was
Scott, we've run out of time.
On the line and not look back.
We've run out of time.
Thank
I want to thank you for coming
for
on.
Me.
Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
On.